Hello, friends. We'd like to apologize up front for any of the minor audio issues you may hear during this episode. We encountered a few gremlins during recording that gave us some technical difficulties. We put some extra time into editing this week to get rid of as many as we could. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother...
Welcome, everybody, to episode 2 of Color of Magic. This has been a really exciting week after launching last week. We actually got 95 downloads as of recording, dude. Isn't that awesome?
That is unbelievable. I have done shows for a lot less than 90 people before in my career. So the fact that 90 people decided to give us a try and get really first episode, I'm ecstatic. We thought maybe 30. We thought 30, if we're 30 or 45, we'd consider it a great launch. And
you just had to attach your train to the right caboose or whatever they say to that is. But honestly, in all seriousness, we appreciate everybody sharing it around, really helping us out here in the early going. So this is really, really exciting for us. This is way more than we thought we were going to get. And I'm expecting by the time this goes live, we'll have over 100 downloads so far. So that's really good for us. And
we got our first patron.
We did. So we got to give a shout out to, I believe he only has his first name in there, is David. So we're going to give a shout out to David. Not only is he our first patron, he signed up at the $10 level.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. So yeah, thanks a bunch. I mean, that's going to at least help with one of the things we have to pay for every month. Exactly. Yeah, for people who don't know, like, podcasts actually have about, I mean, I don't know, ours does. If you break it down monthly, because some of the stuff we paid for a year, it's something like $70-ish, $80 a month. So, like, there's real expenses, you know. One of those things that people don't really talk about much, but it's affordable, but, you know, we're not really making much, especially as we're getting started. So every little bit helps us out there. So for those of you that have not listened before, hopefully you go back and listen to our other episodes. But if you're here for the first time because somebody shared this with you, I'm Daquan Watson, and my co-host is Brian Allen.
Hey, everybody in podcast land.
Yeah, so hopefully you can tolerate listening to us as we talk a lot, sometimes over each other, which we try to edit out and make it cleaner for you. But yeah, we're having an awesome time with this. We're really kind of giving everybody a chance, people of color that are in the magic community, to get a chance to kind of showcase themselves, really more than anything else, just get exposure to everybody that's out there, because we don't really get to do much of that. So hopefully we'll fill that gap and it'll be entertaining.
And speaking of diversity, we had downloads from UK, Canada, Jamaica.
Yeah, that was the thing that blew me away, right? Like, I was like, okay, Canada, yeah, the UK, I sort of get it. But then I saw the ones from Jamaica and I was like, who's listening to us from Jamaica? I mean, it's great. I appreciate it. I do not hate it. I was just surprised that there were three or four downloads from Jamaica, which is kind of awesome.
That requires a road trip to test the Jamaican magic scene, right? I think we got to get that on the calendar for
you know what? Later down the road, year. That might be some type of like Patreon campaign where we raise enough money to get us down to do a live episode from Jamaica from a local game store. I should know this. I don't know if I remember a store in Jamaica, but there probably is. We can go there and we can do a live episode. Since we mentioned the Patreon, we actually have some cool rewards. So everybody that signs up, I'm actually having postcards made with our logo on them. And I am going to personally sign and mail a postcard to everybody that signs up. So at least have that. I don't know. You could frame it. Could be cool. I will probably frame one, so I have one. And we also have some other levels too, where we're going to be giving some stuff away. We have some stuff where you get to play arena against me and Brian. I'm not saying
I'll put you over, probably.
Yeah.
More than likely.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll job to somebody. I'm not above it. But yeah, so there's just a lot of different things we're trying to do, you know, trying not to just be like everybody else that's out there, just giving some different options. So if you could, at the end of the episode, check it out. For now, there was a cool event last weekend on Arena. I don't know if you played or not, Brian, but I got in there and got some of the action.
I did. I got the very brief action, but I did get in there and play.
Oh, that doesn't sound good. That didn't sound good. So what was your final record?
It was 0-2. It took me longer to assemble the deck than it did to play both of my games. It was fast.
That was brief.
I drew two red decks, you know, and I was playing Celestia, so that's supposed to be a winnable matchup, but
Yeah. I did run it. I will say this, you know, it was interesting because it was a best of one format, which I play very little best of one on Arena. Like sometimes I will toward the very end of the season when I'm trying to just get a bunch of games in, but generally I play best of three. And that was a little bit of a change in the deck building to try to decide what cards I wanted because I knew I wasn't going to get to use my sideboard. So that was a little weird for me, but I ended up going, I think it was 6-2. So not bad, not enough to get all the cards, which would have been the good prize. But yeah, it was actually pretty entertaining. I played against a couple of the Golos decks. I believe one was Bant and then one was that plus black, I think. And then played against a couple of red decks, a couple of the Simic Flash decks, I guess is what we're calling them right now.
That is the new hotness.
And just a couple of and then I played against a couple of homebrew sort of things. But I actually played a Gruul deck that I was super excited about, and it was awesome. The Great Hinge, I'm only playing one main, and I think I had one in the sideboard because I didn't really know with it being best of one. But man, when that card gets going, it really is the truth. Like, it's a little bit cumbersome, but I think that, and I also was playing, I guess, okay, to speak about that and Embercleave, because they both have a reduction clause in the cost. For the Great Hinge, it's reduced by the largest power of the creatures you control. And for Embercleave, it's reduced by the number of attacking creatures you control, but it has flash, so you can play it during the combat step. Both cards are totally playable. I think it's a matter of everybody. I think we mentioned this on the last episode. It's both of them are cards that people look at kind of Magic Christmas Land scenarios. Like, how do I get this for two? But the reality is, like, I played them for four and they were fine. You know, you don't have to go crazy. And they were still totally great. Like you got the Great Hinge against the red decks. Once I had two or three creatures and then just every turn I'm gaining two life while I'm casting stuff, that was it. They pretty much couldn't even beat me.
That's red deck loses right there. That's, you know, just any kind of life gain that's consistent.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, so that was really good. The other thing, too, I will say, like, the Golos decks are becoming a real thing. I don't know, probably, well, I guess soon at your local store. Probably didn't have that many people playing them last week because they didn't have all the cards. But I would expect if you go to an FNM and play Standard, you're going to see quite a few of those decks. They are definitely getting played a lot online. Because of that, depending on the deck you're playing, there's going to be some splash damage, right? Legion's End is getting played a bunch because of those decks. So I've even had to change some of the cards I'm playing. One of the things that's let me compete with those decks has actually been having so many haste creatures. So my deck has like Xur'Tar Goblin. It's got the Gruul Spellbreaker. I have the big dragon, you know, just like all these things that are getting in underneath them. So you don't have to worry about the removal as much. It also reduces the quality of their planeswalkers. There's just a lot going on that actually make it a playable deck. Now, the other side of that is there's some decks like I saw. Oh, one of the decks I did lose to was actually the black-red, like, aristocrat-style deck. That was actually surprisingly difficult for the Gruul deck. And I think it's because not only did they have a decent amount of spot removal, once they start getting to use the ones making you sack, is it like something of the Forgotten Gods? Like, that's actually really good and just like makes your life terrible because you just can't keep pace with them. So some of those things were interesting. And it's tough because I don't know.
So there'll still be two or three new things that shake everything up. But if right now,
I don't even know if it can hang with all the Golos decks. I haven't played that matchup hardly at all. So it'd be interesting to see where a lot of that sits. But you did mention you went 0-2. I'm kind of curious what you had built. You mentioned you lost to the red decks, but didn't say what you were playing.
I was a Reduke Celestia Adventurist. So it's red would be a really good matchup. Yeah. So it's probably Pilot Error, I'm sure.
So you're talking about the one that had the innkeeper, the, what is it, the Lucky Charm or where that thing is? Is that the list?
It was probably an early list. I don't think that one had Lucky Clover in it. That's one of the changes okay. probably had between Wednesday and Sunday that I didn't make. Because yeah, I've seen Lucky Clover, and it is degenerate when it goes off.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. And I did manage to beat one of those decks along the way, but it took a lot of work. I mean, you have to really go long against those games. And then I almost have to use Death Touch creatures against the Beanstalk Giant or whatever, because they always play it when it's like a 12-12 or whatever.
I don't think so. Questing Beast in there, so maybe I should have done that, because Questing Beast is, you know, some people hate it, but I mean, it wins games. Some people just concede as soon as they see it, you know?
Well, you know, one thing, the interesting thing about Questing Beast is I don't think that it's insanely overpowered or anything. It's really strong, but it's interesting because when I've played it, it feels like each of the individual things on it seem to matter. So, like, sometimes it's like, okay, well, I can still get an attack in and kill a Planeswalker. But then other times against Golos, it's like, well, they can't block with their zombies because they're only 2/2s.
it does a lot. It fills a lot of roles. It's that, you know, it's a point guard. Does a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I was reading somebody's tweet over the weekend, and they said something like, every time I attack and my opponent has a Questing Beast, I panic for a second thinking I forgot one of the keywords on it.
Yep, no chump blocking, death touch, vigilance. Is that everything? I've probably forgotten something and I ran it over the weekend.
And that's sort of how you feel. You know, it has so much on the card, you kind of forget what's on there sometimes. But what we're getting at is the event was fun. I have to admit, though I don't like Best of One, I appreciate what they were trying to do. I think it was a cool way for people to get to try out multiple decks if they wanted to. You know, because, I mean, I say that. If you lost twice, well, you didn't get to try much. But you could put together whatever deck you wanted. You got the whole library of Standard available to you. And maybe you find something new you like, or you want to just learn how to play a deck in a competitive setting without taking the gamble in paper. There's probably people who played, found they did like something, and now they're able to go purchase those singles with more confidence. So I'd be interested to see kind of what the, I guess, immediate impact is over the next couple of weeks at people's local stores.
I had fun, you know, playing with all the new cards and just kind of looking to see what I thought I might build, because it took me probably a good hour to even decide which thing I wanted to run. So I had fun just digging through all the cards and seeing what things I might attempt to play. So I still had fun, even though I got bounced really quickly.
You bring up a good point. You know, I wonder how many people play one deck generally when they're on Arena because of card availability, right? Maybe they just don't have enough time to generate the gold or the wild cards or whatever to get whatever they need. But like in your case, you're like, well, this is one of those times where you have everything. So it's kind of fun just to go through and imagine, what could I play now that I can have anything I want?
I'm also bad about, you know, not picking a deck and saying, okay, I got to get all the commons for this one. And the uncommon, I'll go, I want to play this. No, I think I want to play this. And, you know, you don't get that many of the, especially the rares and mythic rares. So you got to kind of pick at the beginning which thing you think
you
want to
build.
Yeah, that's
fair. You know, I think for a lot of people, you know, they talk about getting rare gated because you usually have a problem getting enough rare wild cards to build with. Because, I mean, even now, I think I still have something like 20 mythic wild cards, but I might have 10 right here sitting in my account right now because I used several of them for my last deck. But I think that's a thing for a lot of people is deciding, okay, if I build this, I kind of need to play it for at least 2 or 3 weeks to build up some more gold so I can actually, or maybe play it through whatever the event of the week is or whatever, so you can get enough packs or points or whatever. But if you choose incorrectly and you don't like the deck, well, now I spend a lot of equity to build this deck that I don't really want to play in the end. And that can be a hard choice for people.
We can't trade this deck. It's a first round draft pick.
Well, yeah, you can't trade. So once you get it, you get it. So it's an interesting thing. You know, I think it's a give and take with Arena. I think it's fairly easy to acquire more gold and to open more packs and get the wild cards, but also not being able to get rid of them or trade up or dust them in any way does kind of lock you into some decisions a little bit more. And I know some people it's tough because I think if you ask players, obviously they want the best of both worlds, right? They want to be able to get stuff quickly, but then also be able to switch it and dust it and do whatever. So you can't really have both, I think. I think for a healthy economy for the game, one or the other probably has to exist. I think if both do, that's probably bad for the bottom line. I have no idea what the total math looks like, but it feels like you would not be generating very much revenue.
I was not prepared to do any math this evening, Daquan.
Well, you know, I don't mind doing business math. That's fun math. Oh, hey, that means somebody's at the door. Let's check it out and see who it is, because if I am correct, this is somebody who has 3 Grand Prix top eights, 1 Pro Tour top eight, and a win actually in each a Grand Prix and a Pro Tour, and has over 100K in lifetime earnings in Pro Magic events, which is pretty spectacular. The person I'm talking about is Greg Orange. So welcome to the show, man.
Hey, how's it going?
This is great to have you on. This is one of the first time we really got to have real conversation was just before we went on the air. So it's kind of fun getting to read about somebody and then have them on the show with us. It's you, and I will say this, I have not heard anything negative about you, which is awesome. Everybody that's met you has said very positive things about you. I've enjoyed watching you on coverage. Even your moment that made Reddit, where you kind of looked at your teammates and smiled at the kind of had all these.
Oh, yeah, that was really nice.
So, but I think it shows character. I think sometimes people get in these competitive environments and it's like, oh, well, I got to be really serious and, not give anything away. And it's just like, man, if you're having fun, have fun. We're still playing cards.
Yeah. I think some of the funnest games for me to play are when you know, with certainty that you're going to win, I guess. So at that point, I'm like, well, I'm definitely going to win this game. So there's really no downside giving up a little bit of information.
It definitely gets a little easier when you're in that part of the seat, for sure. Actually, so before we get started, do you prefer Greg or Gregory?
Greg is fine.
We can work with that. So why don't you tell us, how did you actually first get started playing Magic?
Well, I guess I started going to FNMs and stuff right before Ravnica came out, the first Ravnica. And I don't know, I just played Magic in school, I guess it was middle school and whatnot, possibly.
Okay. How big was your school group when you first started playing? Was it just 4 or 5 of y'all, or was it a thing that Magic was a big component at your school?
I think there was just a handful of people. It's been a few years now, but
I can imagine. Had you always played games, or was there a particular thing in your upbringing that kind of brought you toward Magic?
I don't know that there was a particular thing. I guess my brother used to play Magic when I was a kid, and I always wanted to play, but I was too young at the time.
Now, was that matter of you wanting to emulate your brother, or had you got your hand on some of the cards and were just really into the artwork and everything else?
Well, no, he just had his friends playing, kitchen table Magic and whatnot, and I was just like, hey, what's going on around here? And they're like, oh, you wouldn't understand.
this is grown folks talking. I've sadly been told that a few times.
Now it absolutely is, but back in the day, it was hard to convince people, no, this is grown folks' business, we swear. There's money in this, we're not kidding.
Well, yeah, now it is grown folks' business. Back in the day, it wasn't. So, if you don't mind us asking, since you're on the show, kind of what's your racial background? Because you do have a little racially ambiguous kind of look, so I don't think not many people really know, actually.
Well, my dad is Black, and my mom is a generic white person, I suppose. I don't know. They actually took the DNA
test. Oh, really?
Somewhat recently. I don't remember exactly what it panned out to be, so maybe I shouldn't have brought it up, but I think there was some German in there or something. I don't remember.
I'm always curious when people take those, because I'm a believer. It's we've already seen some things where well, are they going to sell the information, or who's going to use it, or what are they doing with it? But it's kind of neat to know, right?
I mean, it basically reinforced what I already thought, which was basically what I said.
Well, that's also good too, right? So at least now you know.
When we did it, my sister has this like, oh God, you gave them your information. Don't you know they catch serial killers that way? Like, but I'm not a serial killer, so I'm cool with them having my DNA. Have you killed someone?
Like, why are we almost, that's almost like she's concerned for you, like she expects you're going to be a serial killer one day.
Yeah, I didn't know what to be going with that.
Oh, that's too funny. So, Greg, was there ever a point or any issues or situations that you ran into due to your race or people being just uncomfortable or different, like while you were coming up in Magic, especially even trying to get to like the competitive levels and kind of fit into that crowd?
Well, that's a bit of a hard question. There's not a lot that comes to mind, but you never, I mean, I guess I never really know if anyone is doing anything slightly differently. Maybe there's some certain things they wouldn't want to say or do, but I don't have like a ton of examples of people directly doing something strange, I suppose.
No, that's not a bad thing.
I am.
You know, I think that's the kind of the situation a lot of people would want, you know, and I think it's good that you've managed to find those situations where it wasn't a concern.
Yep. I guess one interesting thing is that, I mean, I live in Minnesota, and so like the demographic is not, there's not super diverse around here, especially like playing Magic too. There's, you know, a lot of white dudes and whatnot. So
sure.
Kind of often like, yeah, I'm kind of often the only, I guess, person of color that, I don't know, in a random like Magic tournament or just in general, like at the high school I went to, like, didn't have any black people in my grade.
Wow, really?
Which was kind of wild. So.
And did you grow up in Minnesota?
I did.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I don't know many people that have been able to say that they were the only black person in their high school graduating class, you know.
Yeah.
So that had to be one of those things that you were probably, I assume, more aware of anytime it came up.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, there occasionally someone might expect that I'd have like some special insight or whatnot. Like if they, I don't know, I remember in high school they wanted me to play, like, it was a small high school, so they wanted me to play on their football team, and I'm like, I don't play sports. So that's not me.
They're all, what do you mean you don't play sports?
Wait, we need a running back. Well, we have a black guy. Oh, that's tough, man. Yeah, so how did, like, I don't know, how do you react to those situations when that sort of thing happens?
I don't know, just shrug it off, I guess. Well, I don't know, it's mostly just, it was almost, I don't know, I mean, there was some situations where I felt like slightly like a novelty, I guess, maybe, I don't know. That sounds more negative than it, I mean, too, but.
Well, you know, I think, well, I know I've dealt with that a little bit. I mean, I'm sure Brian has too on some level.
Yeah.
But I guess on some level, I guess the word people like to use for that is tokenism. You know, people just kind of assume like, oh, well, I don't know who, somebody would know the black rap trivia. I know who to go ask. You know, it's like, dude, I don't listen to the new rappers. Why would I know that? You know, like.
Or who to talk to about buying some weed, for those of you that listened to last week's podcast.
That's true. We brought that up last week.
You want to check that story out from last week?
Yeah, no one ever asked me where to buy weed, strangely enough.
Yeah, that was an awkward situation. But yeah, so I mean, I guess that's a real thing. You know, tokenism is something that does happen fairly regularly in the game community because it's, I mean, it is still predominantly white. I mean, and not to really cast dispersion on anybody, but it's also very devoid of black culture in a lot of circles. I mean, it's very cool that there's groups that do kind of help promote that a little more. Matter of fact, I got turned on to some last weekend. There was one of the groups, I believe they're called The Cookout, which is a great name, to try to do some uplifting of the black community in gaming circles. So they have a whole network, and like that's really cool. But
interesting.
And most of the people, I kind of was going through and looking at different Twitter channels and or Twitter feeds and stuff for them, and you know, YouTube channels and things for different members, and a lot of it was them just saying like, it's cool to be part of a group or a family of people that are familiar, or they get where you're coming from, or you know, just little things, which when I don't really think about it a lot, because I think you just at times get used to how things are, as sad as it is to say. not that it's bad. It's just like, that's how you function to get through everything. But then when you hear other people saying it, you're like, yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense.
There's definitely things that I've thought, little things that people have said, or I've thought about looking back. Like, for example, I heard someone say, like, the meme where, hey, can I touch your hair, or whatnot? And then I remember hearing that, like, oh, yeah, someone did ask me if they could touch my hair. Like, I didn't think anything at the time, but looking back at it, I'm like, eh, maybe I should have.
Yeah, I've been asked that a few times. It hasn't happened, I think, probably since I was, like, 20-ish. It was probably the last time it happened. So there's a point where I think people just learn and they just quit asking.
But you know what has actually started happening lately, Q?
What's that?
My wife went natural, and now black people have to touch your hair more than white people. I swear to God.
That's great.
They want to see if they want to do it. Ooh, can I touch it? And just, you know, like when white people do it, they very rarely ask, can I? They just start, oh, it's so pretty, and they just start running their hair.
That's crazy, man. But yeah, I mean, I think it's the type of thing that, you know, sometimes it's harder to find people or situations that are relatable when you're the only one. Actually, this morning, funny as it is, I was listening to Sway in the Morning, a station on Sirius XM, and they had an interview they had played that I guess they did with Tyler Perry. And for those of you who don't know, Tyler Perry just opened a 330-acre facility in Atlanta for people to record. It's like sound stages, like a whole bunch of stuff out there. And it's supposed to be, I think, employing something like 1,000 people. That lot, from what I understand, is actually bigger than the lots they use out in like Burbank, California, owned by all the big studios. The interview, he was basically saying, you know, I guess the quote was something like, he's one of the most successful directors in Hollywood that gets ignored. And did it bother him? And his quote was like, well, not really, because the things I'm doing and the stories I'm writing are effectively speaking to a certain person, a certain type of community. And I understand that a lot of people won't get it. But for the people that do, it's really important. And he's just rolling with it. You know, so it's kind of cool to see that out there in the world. It's not necessarily directly related. I thought it was a cool story because it's somebody kind of saying, yeah, this is a small group, but I'm doing something for them that's representative and it matters.
And I think it's the only black-owned studio that doesn't have, you know, isn't backed by some other studio, movie studio or company or something like that. So it's,
oh yeah, what that means is we got to start referring to him as Mr. Perry. That's what it means,
Mr. Perry.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
and if you have a podcast studio, Tyler.
Hey, if he's got one, count me in. So bring it back to magic a little bit. Are you still sponsored, Greg?
Yeah, I'm with Hallelujah.
Oh, really? So how did that come about?
After the PT win in Minneapolis, my two teammates from the team PT, basically, they wanted us as like a package deal, I suppose.
That's awesome. So all three of you got picked up? That is a sweet deal. Because normally you have like that awkward scenario where like, well, we really want this person. Like, how does this work? Like, do we have to take everybody? Like, so was that something that you guys pursued, or did they come to you guys, or how did that really work?
I believe we pursued them. We tried to put together like a pro team when they were still having pro teams, I guess. And I didn't really like contribute that much to figuring out the details, to be honest. But I don't know, it was pretty nice.
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Occasionally write an article and whatnot.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, I think, that kind of, especially now in the world of esports, we have a lot of people that are trying, like getting sponsored is the goal for them, right? Because it adds some amount of stability, whether in the case of Magic, it could be helping you get card supplies or whatever, depending on your agreement, help you with travel expenses, you know, different things that make, I guess, the experience of being a professional player more attainable and affordable. So yeah, it's really cool to see people building these teams and kind of going out there and even finding sponsors that are, I guess, responsive, right? Because I'm sure you get shut down a lot whenever you ask. I would also say, how much time per week do you dedicate to Magic? Because obviously you're out here winning Grand Prix and Pro Tours, like that doesn't come just, you know, spending 5 hours a week, I'm sure.
I don't spend like a ton of time. When there's an event coming up, I try to, you know, figure out what I'm going to play and play that deck and figure out the, you know, the deck list and the details, make sure I have, I don't know, a good sideboard, let's say.
But, what do you like to play just for fun? You know, how do you kick back and play Magic? Or do you get to kick back and play things for fun?
I mean, I obviously just like to play Dirtily Blue Way whenever possible.
So you're the guy that people don't like at FNMs, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I actually met a friend in college that said, like, man, I remember playing against you at FNM, and I thought you were a huge dick. And I was like, what did I do? And they were like, oh, you're just playing Blue White. Like, oh, I guess I'll counter that. I guess I'll play Jace and draw three cards.
That is kind of funny, right? I think there are a lot of players that sort of just deem the mono blue or blue white player just the bad guy right off the bat.
Yeah, and apparently I have a fairly monotone voice when I play, so no matter like whether I'm getting crushed or winning, I'll always just like, oh, well, I guess I'll play this Wrath and kill all your guys, and I guess I'll ultimate my Planeswalker and make a Teferi emblem, I suppose.
That's great. So, And I get it, too, because if people don't know you, like, they don't know this is just your demeanor. So they're like, oh, what's up with this guy?
Yeah.
You just like to watch the world burn.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously there's a big Magic tournament coming up. Are you participating in this event?
Yes. I assume you beat the arena.
Yep, that's the one.
Whatever. And I am playing awesome. In that. I'm pretty psyched.
But when you guys have to submit your deck for that, I know you have to do it early because they try to prep everything for like cameras and video and everything else.
I have to submit it on Wednesday and it's Monday.
Oh gosh.
Now,
and so, I'm assuming you don't have your mind made up yet.
No, I have my deck selected. Yeah, so I think I just need to figure out the finer details of the, I don't know, the sideboard and, you know, random slots or whatever.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. You're going to be submitting a deck on Wednesday that isn't going to be played for several days. So it's well ahead of the event actually happening.
Yeah, usually it's not that early. For Pro Tours, usually they have you submit it on, like, Wednesday beforehand. And I mean, obviously, both times it's Wednesday, but this one's on the following weekend rather than the weekend following the Wednesday or whatever.
So. Yeah, it kind of tells you.
So it's like an entire
extra. Yeah, it tells you the extra prep that kind of has to go into setting stuff up for arena events for cameras and whatnot. And, you know, the interesting thing is the way arena moves so quickly is the decks people submit may look nothing like what people are actually playing on Arena, or at least those versions of those decks, by the time the event actually happens.
Yeah, it could be.
That's going to be a really interesting one to see, especially since we haven't explored Eldraine all that much this go-around. Like, it feels like there's a lot of cards that we've all talked about and we're interested in, but we haven't really seen them make an impact yet. So it'd be curious if somebody figures a thing out right now and they submit it. Will that thing already be known to the public by the time the event happens, or who knows what?
Yeah, there's definitely already a lot of powerful cards in Standard, even without Eldraine. So, I mean, you never know what could come, what could change, and, you know, come going forward. But there's a lot to compete with.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I remember just this past weekend when I was deck building, there were cards I almost had forgotten about from Guilds of Ravnica that I'm like, oh yeah, this is still a thing, and oh yeah, this card's still a thing, and just thinking like, man, there's all these cards I can play with, like, and you start thinking like, why did I quit playing this card? But it's like, oh well, we just had an 8-set Standard where everything was absurd, so some stuff just didn't get playtime.
I mean War of the Spark in particular was just like a really powerful set with like a whole bunch of multi-format all-star type cards, I suppose, like Narset's getting played in Standard, Modern, Legacy, and Vintage, or whatever.
That's true.
There
are cards that definitely did cross over to multiple formats. And I don't know if that was expected or not from an R&D perspective, but I think it definitely caught a lot of players off guard.
Yeah, I doubt they're doing that much R&D with vintage and whatnot, but I have no idea about that. So
Daquan probably does. He probably has some idea.
I have a little bit of an idea, but hey, I wasn't in R&D. I hung out with the marketing folks.
When is this podcast going?
We are
up
trying
anyway?
To have it up on Friday. So yeah, so okay. We're gonna get this.
So I'll have my deck list submitted.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll already be done. Like, doesn't matter if people know. The secret will be out.
Ooh. So do you?
Yeah,
want to know?
If you're willing to spill the beans, we would love to know.
All right. Well, I'm planning on playing the Field of the Dead Golos deck. I know it's very exciting.
I knew that was going to be the answer. I'm like somebody who likes playing blue white. Yeah, like what other deck would he choose? Like that's totally on brand.
I guess it's a deck that has blue
exactly.
and white, but it's not exactly the deck I'd really love to play, but I'll try to make it work, I suppose.
Was there something else you were looking at that you were considering?
Well, I tried the Doom Foretold deck, because it looked, I don't know, wild.
Well,
I
getting
suppose,
to play the Abyss in Standard is kind of sweet.
Yeah, but I think it played better than it looked on paper. I don't know. I think just too much of like the card slots were locked into, you know, playing eggs and cards that don't necessarily do a whole
lot.
Yeah,
I think that's how I felt when I hadn't played the deck, but I had it played against me 3 or 4 times on Arena. And there were a lot of turns that felt exactly like that. Like they played an egg, drew a card, played another egg, and then didn't do anything. I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just attack for 5. Yeah, like it was kind of weird.
This deck is composed of 56 cards to allow me to draw into these 4 cards that will win me the game.
It felt like that, though, sitting across from it.
When it was doing its thing, it was pretty nice, though.
Well, if you get locked under the Doom Foretold, it does get pretty silly. Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in 5 fire questions. All right, so I'm going to come at you with 3 questions that are going to be a little more serious, not crazy, and then Brian's going to come at you with 2 what I'll call less serious questions. So for starters, seeing as how you actually have a significant amount of Pro Tour winnings, you have like 170 lifetime pro points, does it bother you that other pros below you get recognized more than you do?
I mean, I guess I'd like to be recognized more. So what exactly do you mean by recognized?
I think there's other names that come up. Like, I guess when we're talking about like the David Ochoa or Mark Herbeholz, some of those guys that are looked upon as being better players, or their names come up in conversations more often than yours does.
Sure. I think doesn't Mark have like a 4?
He probably does. That one's deserving, actually. I can't really take shots at him. Like, that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of that is probably my fault. I feel like maybe I could be more active on social media or whatnot. I don't know. Be engaged.
Do more personal branding.
Something like that. Yeah. I haven't done a lot to push the brand. I don't know. Is that
well, it's
kind of
funny because that was going to be my next question. Actually, now that you've started building credentials, and you know you're being seen at least a little more on camera matches and stuff. Have you found ways or taken opportunities to try to lean on that, especially now that you have a sponsorship?
I've tried a few different things, I suppose. I actually tried to make my own podcast. I didn't quite realize how tough it would be, I suppose.
You heard it here. We're doing real work.
Yeah, so I made a few episodes of that, but I was having trouble like uploading it, I suppose, so I just put it on YouTube and wasn't getting that many views and whatnot.
Feel free to share us the link after this, and I will gladly put it in the show notes for the episode for people to check it out.
Yeah, it was fun. It had a fun premise. So
yeah, I think it's great. Like, I'm all for signal boosting somebody else's project. So for sure. Like, I didn't know this existed, and we actually tried to do our research before having guests on. So I would love to go watch this and see what it's all about.
Yeah, well, I have to. So, it doesn't really exist. There's only a handful of episodes, but the concept was really fun, which is I'd have a 20-sided die with different topics on it, and like one of the topics just ended the show. So you talk about each topic for 3 minutes when you rolled it, and it would always get switched out. So it's potentially an infinitely long podcast or a podcast that would last, you know, like 3 minutes.
I want to bring this back now. I love this.
Exactly. I'm like, this is like what I'm thinking is I go to watch and I'm kind of like, oh, sweet. He put up a new episode today. And I'm like, oh, that was like 6 minutes. Or like that was 2 hours.
Yeah, I actually recorded an episode right after winning the PT, and I did it with a friend of mine. And so we had some random topics, and there was like 5 topics about the PT win. And there's one topic with my friend about him winning a PPTQ like 3 weeks ago. And so we roll that topic, talk about the PPTQ win, and then the next roll just ends the podcast. So it's a bit of a mixed bag.
But I appreciate that it's something different. Like, people know what they're signing up for. It's kind of like when you go watch the professor's booster box game or whatever. Like, he might go 7 boxes deep, or he might be done in 1 box. So, you know, he's got 2-hour-long videos, and he's got 10-minute videos. And I think that's fine. I think as long as people know what they're signing up for, I appreciate that the format's different.
It's experimental. I love it. Andy Kaufman would love it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He might have inspired me to give it another shot.
Do it.
Peer pressure.
If all your friends went and jumped off the cliff, would you? No, I'm not even going to start that.
You looking at my notes? That's one of my questions.
Okay, so my last question for Greg. Since you started playing around Ravnica, you said, what is your favorite Magic set of all time?
Well, I did start playing around Ravnica, and that's definitely up there. I also liked Time Spiral Block, which was right after Ravnica, right? So I guess they have some nostalgia for that era when I first started, I suppose. But
yeah, the reason I asked the question is because that's kind of the same thing I see a lot with people, is they tend to have a very strong feeling for sets that released around the first year that they started playing. And I think it's because, like, that's the point of discovery when everything's new, where you kind of, I don't want to say like check out of reality, but it's where you like, you start dedicating more time to learning the decks and the cards, and like it plays an important point in your life, even though you're not paying attention to it. But then you think about it later and it's like, oh, those were good times. I liked all those cards.
Yeah. Apparently, I think I heard that from like the R&D perspective that Time Spiral Block wasn't super well received because it was super complicated with like the number of
keywords. That's actually a real thing. Like, it was one of those things that the average player was not that excited about. Though the cards were powerful, they weren't necessarily appealing to a casual player, which is kind of a big deal. And that's one of the reasons I think we talked about Eldraine a little bit. That's very cool, is though the cards give you a lot of strategic decisions and they're fun to play with if you're a competitive player, they're all easily grokkable if you're a casual player. Like, the cards do what you think they do, for the most part.
I suppose. But all the cards in Eldraine are a bit of like a bit of a book. I suppose they have the actual storybook cards, but I don't know. I noticed playing on Magic Online, like, the text on like every card is just off the screen. You know, you have to zoom in on everything. Like, oh, what
they're definitely doing a lot. I will not deny that. All right, so that's my questions. Brian, hit them with your two.
All right, as we've mentioned several times, you know, over 100,000 career earnings. Have you had any just ridiculous, baller, kind of Kanye West purchases that you've never bought otherwise?
I didn't buy anything too crazy, I guess. Probably the one thing that I bought that was out of the norm, I guess, is I bought like a kind of pricey pair of headphones.
You went out and bought you some Beats?
That's super exciting. Like Sony brand headphones, just something I wouldn't normally buy.
Okay,
you
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's cool. Good purchase. Yeah.
Well, I also got a Nintendo Switch, so
prove that message.
Yeah.
All right. Let's say you are the Thanos of Magic. Which cards are going to give me? I guess three cards are going away if you're the Thanos of Magic.
Ooh. It's probably, I'd go with Cavern of Souls.
Of course. The control player wants that card gone.
Yeah, no need for that card. Too much text anyways. I'd probably get rid of Vela Summer. No need for that.
I love the theme here.
Yeah, there's a bit of a theme. and then, I don't know, some third
thing. SpongeBob and some other third thing.
And a third thing, I don't know.
That's too funny. It doesn't even surprise me that those would have been your
control
answers.
Control player, laying the smack down.
Yeah, I don't know. Too many things are uncounterable, you know? They need to make some more counterable things, you know, make more counterable or counter spells.
You can say no even more in a monotone voice. I get it.
I like playing with three mana Teferi, I suppose, but it's not super fun when everyone just has Teferi and everyone's just sort of doing their own thing, you know. I like
yeah,
some nice back
that
and
is
forth,
a weird thing, know? If you're very like, if your first instinct is to play a control deck or a counterspell deck, both people are inclined to play Teferi, which then makes it where nobody's playing counterspells.
Yeah. So it's pretty hard to play counterspells in standard with Teferi, and regardless of, I mean, even if like Vela Summer didn't exist or whatnot, you know, standard is just like so proactive these days, it seems. All the decks are just like, I'm doing my thing, you better move out the way, you know?
The counter falls in the forest, and no one is there to say no. Does he still make it?
I miss the decks where it's just all reactive cards, so you have to, you know, think about what your opponent could have and whatnot. And I mean, I guess you have to think about what they could have anyway, but I don't know, I feel like there's more just decks that are just executing their own game plan right now, and I sort of miss the deck that just had, like, the one win condition, and you just answered everything until you got to the spot where, you know, you didn't really matter how you ended the game, you know?
I remember the old Stalking Stones decks that were the true draw-go decks that had, they played something like 30 lands, and the win conditions were for real Stalking Stones that they would turn into creatures and attack you. Like, oh my god, those decks were so rough to play against. I mean, but I think what Greg's saying is correct here, though.
That sounds nice.
Which is that you actually got to play a different type of Magic. Like, now, when you're even playing a proactive deck, you're very much trying to figure out, like, well, what kill cards do they have, or what do I think their turn sequence is going to look like? Versus, okay, like, what cards do I want to lead out with, knowing there's a potential counter in the way to get something else through on the following turn? You know, like, just the way you're playing is entirely different. The way you're sequencing cards is entirely different.
Yeah. Like, the way I like to play is, I like to ask myself the question, how could I lose this game? Like, what could happen for me to lose? And then try to go from there. But now that's not, I don't know, not quite as an important question, it seems. It's more like, how do I win seems a lot more important these days, I suppose.
Me, it's kind of like, how am I going to screw this up?
Which yeah, that's true.
To make first?
Like, I've been, I don't know, playing some of the Golos deck, and I don't know, it seems like most of it is just, all right, how do I execute my game plan most efficiently here?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, unless they're coming in with something that's very low to the ground to where you're having to dodge bullets, you're kind of just figuring out, how do I get this into play the most efficient way possible? That's all you're really looking at. Well, since we got you here and you survived the 5 questions, why don't you join us for some dinner table talk? So, yeah, we normally sit around.
I'd be honored.
We normally sit everybody down at the table. We have a good conversation about a topic that we've pre-selected. And since it came up earlier in the episode, I think it's very fitting that we just talk about representation as a whole. You know, in Magic, but also kind of in gaming in general. You know, I think it's very interesting to see how people respond when they see people that share their likenesses or their ideas or whatever within a greater subject. You know, I one of the things I find interesting, and it was almost like I didn't greatly realize it until while I was at Wizards, one of the things they were doing is they were bringing people in and doing kind of, I guess if you want to call it a survey or a test, of showing different styles of artwork for Vivian. And some were her in the forest, some were her with like her hood up or hood down or whatever. And it was funny because one of the things when they asked me when I was looking at it, it's like, I actually prefer the image with her hood down. So you can see clearly that she is a woman of darker skin tone, because that's something to that point that hasn't been showcased in Magic.
Yeah, I love it. That's
the thing for me that was interesting is I didn't even realize that mattered to me until I had three or four images in front of me. And I'm like, no, that one's the one I like the most. And here's why. And I think that's one of those moments where I sort of felt like this matters. Like, this is important, you know, like even in Magic, this is a thing that's going to matter to somebody. So we should go with this one.
It's important, you know, talking about like, I mean, these are, you know, these are kind of like comic book superheroes. And growing up, how many comic book superheroes did you see that look like us? And how many of them didn't have black in their name somewhere, just in case you were going to miss the fact that they were black in some way?
Yeah, I'm glad that they're bringing in some more diverse characters into the artwork. Like, I like that they brought Teferi back. Obviously. But I went to the Pro Tour London with my folks. My parents came with, and my dad, like, we were at the venue, and my dad saw the poster of Teferi, and he's like, who is this, you know? And he wanted to so he took a photo in front
but
of
but see that's cool, because even to him, somebody who I'm assuming doesn't play Magic very often, like, it still stood out as being like something he recognized. No. Isn't something you're likely to see in that space very often.
Yeah, well, he just appreciated it, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, right? It's not even, I think that's kind of where it, like, when I thought about the whole Vivian thing, if it doesn't exist, it's not going to stop me from playing Magic, right? But now that I know it exists, it's like, I don't know, this is kind of nice. Like, maybe we need more of this to exist. And I'm, you know, I've been in the industry for years, kind of grew up in it. It makes me wonder, like, how do other people view that aren't as acclimated, or hell, in some ways, I guess, institutionalized in some ways to the way things are. And I wonder if that's, you know, one of the things that's going to be good for acquisition as you start getting people transitioning from other games or trying it out for the first time, or even, I guess, when they get to doing this animated series, being able to see those characters and see people that, though they're all from imaginary planes, people are going to be able to relate to them as being from different parts of the world.
So excited about that. It's going to, yeah, again, you know, just to have heroes, and it just for somebody, you know, somebody in India, somebody, you know, for women to have that same feeling, to see heroes that look like them in a certain way and may go through some of the same challenges they go through in everyday
life.
Yeah,
I think it's all very important. You know, actually, one thing about it, Greg, did you get one of the discretionary invites for one of the previous Mythic Invitationals or something like that?
I didn't get a discretional invite to the Invitational. No, I got an invite to the arena, the first arena Mythic Championship, and they gave it to like the last four like Pro Tour winners or whatnot. But for the Invitational, I think the Pro Tour that I won was like the only Pro Tour champions, or I guess because there's three of us, that weren't invited for over the last like year or so, like from some, like, I think all the Pro Tour champions from Kaladesh.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Were invited. The one, yeah. So the winner after us, Ellen Bogan, was invited, and the winner before us, Wyatt Darby, was invited, and all the way back to, I think it was Kaladesh, I want to say, I can't remember exactly, but so it's kind of, I don't know. Kind of, I might have felt slighted.
Yeah, I would have felt a bit slighted. I'd been like, yo, hey, wait, we won a Pro Tour too. Like, what gives? Yeah. Make two more seats. Let's make this happen.
Can you give a little background on the discretionary invites? Because I don't know if everybody knows exactly what those are and kind of how they work.
Yeah, so there was a point where And I guess technically they still exist and they're going to exist in the future setup for pro events. But basically they're invites that Wizards has the right to offer to whomever they deem worthy. Like in Greg's case, they chose somebody who had already won a pro tour and proven themselves. So that's one that everybody's mostly on board with, right? But they do have the option to invite anyone, which there's been a lot of discussion about them, and people feel strongly, you know, in both directions that they're good and bad. For me personally, I think they're good to exist. I mean, okay, from the business end, people hate hearing this, but the Pro Tour is a marketing vehicle, right? You're using it to get eyes on the game. They're obviously throwing a bunch of money at it. You're putting stuff online on streams, and all of these are ultimately revenue streams at the end of the day. So you do need to do things to encourage different communities to come view it. Now, I don't know if that means they're just going to give invites to top players of other games. I mean, which they'll be able to. But I'm hoping they use it to add some level of diversity, you know, like we're talking about, like give people some representation, whether it's to somebody from a country that only has a few serious players so they get some exposure, whether it's to, I don't know, an LGBT member of the community, or I mean, there's a lot of ways you can get extra representation in the game. I think honestly just giving it to more women's probably good. You know, there are a lot of groups I think that could benefit from, even if it's just one or two invites per event.
And we've seen kind of how that can work, you know, in pro sports, or for example, you know, the Houston Rockets have a huge Chinese fan base because Yao Ming played for them. And that's been probably, I don't know how long, 12, 13 years, but they still have a huge fan base because they had Yao Ming on their team.
What were you going to say, Greg?
I'm not sure exactly what to say here, but I think it's good to have more, I guess, at least a little bit of diversity going on in the, I suppose, the discretionary invites. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't have, like, all the invites, like, in front of me, so I don't know exactly who's, I don't remember exactly who's invited, I suppose. But, I don't know, I hope they wield that power for good.
No, and I'm with you. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think there are ways it can be used that I think are very beneficial. I think there are other ways that it's like, okay, this is just a quick money grab to see like, oh, this person has, I don't know, a million followers on Twitch. Let's invite them. You know, that sort of thing. So I think, and I do give credit to where I have a feeling they will figure it out. I just think we have to give them time to kind of see like they're going to probably play with the invites a little bit and see what works best one way or the other. Because and the reason, one of the things too, I think people forget is that the reason I think representation is important is that if somebody is looking at, say, Magic in this case, and you kind of look at an event and you go down the MPL list or you see the top finishers or whatever, and you look and go like, well, it's kind of just a bunch of white guys. Like, it's not so much about hating on those guys as much as it is about, well, is this a space where I'm welcome? Like, is this going to be okay? Or is this going to be awkward? Or is there anybody I can relate to if I become a pro and I'm on like road trips or whatever? Like, people start asking themselves just a lot of personal questions that then become their own hurdles to even wanting to try the game out, which I think is something that people don't think much about.
Yeah. I suppose I wouldn't hurt if there was a black person in the MPL.
That's something we can really work toward. I think that would be a small win at least. You know, it's funny because even, you know, like Brian pointed out about superheroes, right? When the Black Panther came out, which also is amusing because when he was created, it has black in his name, like most superheroes of the time. Like, but it was one of those things that I'm like, oh, this movie's really cool. And they treated it really well. And like, yeah, exciting. And then you just kind of saw how it blew up. But a lot of it was like people really saying like, man, this is actually like a show that's just full of people like me. And this is awesome. And people just flock to it. And I think one of those things that when I listened to the Marvel directors talk about it, I'm not even sure they knew how big it was going to be, other than just like, this is a thing we feel like we should do. You know, but we got another one coming, so we'll see what happens.
There's no way they knew, because he's barely in Infinity War. So, I mean, they can't have known. You know?
It doesn't really seem like they foresaw that one. I mean, isn't it the most, a successful Avenger movie besides the actual Avenger team up movie?
It was until we got to the
the
end game stuff or whatever. But yeah, as far as single character, and I think it's the highest grossing movie ever that predominantly stars a black cast.
I believe so.
So yeah, there's definitely something to that. You know, I think we're getting there. Like I said, I think you can see where some of the efforts are happening. I think Wizards is really putting in efforts to make it happen. Even going back before Vivian, I think you had Kaya, I think, when she made her debut. I remember them talking about writing the story for Kaya and going out and trying to find, a black female writer, and then going out and, sourcing, hey, is it okay if we depict her like this? Is this a story that's going to offend people because she's doing this type of thing or whatever? They were being really careful and measured about how they did it, because they knew it could be important and they didn't want to mistreat an opportunity, because Kaya really is the first I guess people have pointed out there's Koth, who's dark skinned, but I mean, he is what he is.
We don't know his background really.
But Kaya,
I hadn't seen him at the cookout.
Yeah, exactly. You hadn't seen him at a cookout.
Doesn't Koth have rocks?
Yeah, exactly. Out of all parts of him, as far as I can tell. But Kaya was the first time they actually put just a black woman with natural hair and everything else on a card. And the card is actually pretty sweet. It was really cool. Future Kaya related stuff ended up being awesome. And she's got a little bit of a fan base, so it's awesome. But I appreciate the effort they put in, that it wasn't just, all right, well, we need to have a black character, so let's just do this thing and then we'll call it good. It was just no, we want to make sure that not only is it a black character, it's a black character that makes sense to black people. And that was really cool. Like I said, they're making efforts. I don't think it's anything that's quick. I mean, you're talking about, even at that point, it was a 22-year history before we got to that point that they're trying to add on to. So everything has to be treated very carefully, but I think it can happen.
Baby steps.
Yeah, exactly. One step at a time. You got to put you got to crawl before you can walk, right?
They do say that, I think.
That's the great thing, is that they're aware and they're working on it. Because for you to, you got to acknowledge a problem before you can fix a problem.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I think there's a lot of times people just say, I hear this is a thing, let's go do it. It's no, let's really understand the problem so you can approach it the right way, other than just placating something to get it by. But cool, I think that wraps up our dinner table talk. And I want to thank Greg for coming and joining us. This was actually fun. I actually get to know more about you now, and we will be rooting for you in, I guess when this goes live, it'll be a week from the time this goes up. We're going to be watching. The world is watching.
You got your little man.
You're going to have more fans now and a couple more people following you on Twitter, hopefully.
All right. Sounds good.
So yeah, I want to say again, thanks to everybody for the early success we've had with this whole project. This is really fun, really exciting. We're getting to meet some cool people. I implore everybody to come join us on Twitter or Facebook. We are totally accessible. I've already been exchanging a ton of messages. People have given me a ton of references of people we can bring onto the show, which I have a list of, I think it's 42. Actually, no, let me check. It's 53 different people or groups that I am currently researching or looking into for how we can bring them on. So the community already has been great for giving us resources, which is awesome. People have reached out and started sharing links to our stuff, which we super duper appreciate it.
We both said, Daquan has done this before. The technology's changed a lot since the time he did it, so he's learning stuff. I've never done a podcast before, so yeah, we're gonna mess some things up, and it's great that y'all. We expect y'all will tell us when we have messed
up. I know I'm gonna mess something up along the way. there's no doubt. So before we get out of here, Greg, why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you? I mean, we know you have a tournament coming up, but how do they find you on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, any of that stuff that you're involved in?
Well, my Twitter handle is orange_Greg, and I think on Twitch I'm Citrus Assassin or something. I don't stream. See, terribly
you're talking
often,
about branding. But... you gotta brand that, man. Citrus Assassin is awesome. Like, you gotta have somebody make you a logo and put that on like the back of a jacket or something.
Yeah, it could be.
I would buy that. Yeah,
exactly.
Merch.
Sell that merch. Put it on sleeves. Like, that'd be too good.
Yeah, I don't know. The Citrus Assassin is kind of a nice nickname. Might be a
slightly who cares, man? That's stuff that people remember. It sticks with them. So yeah, Brian, how do they find you on social?
I am DL Caesar. It's spelled just like the Roman Emperor, and I am on Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch.
Awesome. And as usual, for everybody who's followed me forever, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragn on just about everything. If you can't find me by my actual name, I'm pretty sure you will find Power Dragon somewhere on there. So the only thing I have left to say is thanks again to everybody who's helped us out sharing and getting the word out about our series. We'd love it if you continue sharing it with your friends. And join us over on Twitter. We're having a bunch of good discussions. Or on Facebook, where we started a group for the show. And yeah, if you're so inclined, check out our Patreon. So everybody's doing great to help us out. We're building a small fan base. At some point, we're going to have to come up with a cool name for our followers, too, because everybody seems to do that. And I got nothing right now. Maybe I'll make that a contest on social. I don't know. We'll see.
I came with Citrus Assassin, so he'll come up with something.
Well, I didn't come up with that.
Shh, take credit, Mark.
You talk to whoever came up with it.
Yeah, so we're going to wrap this up here. I want to say thank you again to everybody on behalf of Greg and Brian. Wherever, whenever you're listening to us, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. We'd love it if you could help us out over at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also follow some of our exploits and blogs over at colorofmtg.com. We also can be found on Twitter and Facebook at Color of Magic. And once again, we'd like to thank everybody for sharing our previous episodes, and hopefully this one, and helping us extend our reach. So far, all of our fans have been fabulous, and hopefully we can keep continuing to bring you great content. Thanks again.